Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer at Post 9 of the New York Stock Exchange. David Faber's at the Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles. Pretty steady market ahead of the open. Light on data this week, but plenty of high-profile earnings from Disney and Uber to Airbnb and Arm. 10-year remains below 4.5. Our roadmap begins with Berkshire's boom, a 39% gain in Q1 operating profit. That's a new record. Meantime, Buffett says they did trim Apple and sold off Paramount at a loss.
Speaking of Paramount, the company is, or its special committee is, opening up negotiations with Sony and Apollo, who are teaming up. They're also still talking with Skydance as well about their bid for the overall company. And from here at the Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles, over the next 2 hours, we're going to be joined by Apollo Global's Mark Rowan, Goldman Sachs' David Solomon, and Exxon's Darren Woods. So nice lineup ahead, guys.
Let's begin, David, with Buffett and Apple. After that stock's Friday rally, Berkshire says it did trim its stake in the iPhone maker by about 13% to just over $135 billion in Q1. Didn't stop Buffett from praising Apple at the meeting over the weekend. Take a listen.
At the end of the year, I would think it extremely likely that Apple is the largest common stock holding we have now. When we look at Coca-Cola and American Express and Apple, we look at them as businesses. Now, there's differences in tax factors, there's difference in managerial responsibility, a whole bunch of things. But in terms of deploying your money, we always look at every stock as a business. And we have no attempt made to predict markets. We have no attempt made to pick stocks.
Jim said the business may be even better than Coke AXP, and said the iPhone's probably the best product of all time.
Yeah, look, I think that he definitely endorsed him to Tim Cook there. I struggled to try to figure out whether he was in that camp which just says there's nothing new, or the camp that says he didn't give us exactly a world in service. And also, remember, Tim Cook is adamant, it's a tech company. And I wasn't sure whether Buffett felt it was a service company with tech. None of these have to do with the fact he's selling some. David, you know that Apple's become very controversial because of whether it has growth or not, and whether it's just an iPhone company without something new. What is your impression about what people are saying? Say about Vision Pro, does it matter? What else is moving the needle that they're doing? And does that impact, you think, what Buffett's thinking?
I really don't know, Jim. You're the only person who's talking regularly about Vision Pro. And as our viewers know, you are single-handedly trying to make sure it becomes a key part of the enterprise, so to speak, that businesses use it. But beyond that, as you well know, I think the focus now is, what, about a month away, right? At the developers conference, and what the company will be saying specifically about generative AI, its inclusion in the next generation iPhone, and whether that will truly drive an upcycle in sales. Obviously, we are coming off a quarter that was well received by investors, Jim, as you know. And I mean, Buffett's going to be an owner here for a long time to come, even with that, obviously, reduction a bit in the overall size of the position.
Well, David, there's no doubt that if you have a refresh cycle that is AI, which is what Tim Cook told me last week, that wait, you see, you won't believe the AI that we have, then you would upgrade your phone, because that is the first real change, not incremental change, but real change. I postulated that some of the things that that Samsung has, the Android system, including, you get to circle things, and the one where if you speak, it allows you to speak in the language that you're with. I mean, I didn't go specifically to that, but Tim Cook told me, don't worry about that this stuff will be so much better that Apple has. So, David, I mean, I can't imagine not wanting to get that phone if it has AI in it.
Okay. Well, that's a positive, isn't it?
I thought so. And as it, and when it comes to the Vision Pro, there was an article that I read this weekend that said that 100 Fortune companies have gotten it. So that means half of the Fortune 100 has taken Vision Pro, which this WAG said will means they've sold 50 Vision Pros. Kind of left me hanging there on the Vision Pro there.
I mean, when everyone else is done talking about Vision Pro, Carl, I do believe that that our friend Jim Cramer will still be talking about it. So they got that going for them.
Well, can I call it spatial computing? Can I go beyond
Vision
Pro?
That's what Apple would call it.
Yeah, spatial computing, which is used
to be able
to make things, a digital twin, to be able to sell things, houses and cars. Carl, I know I'm in the minority in this, and I don't have any bones to pick.
I think minority is the wrong word. Early, I think, is the right word.
But remember, I got it from Jensen Huang. I didn't get it from Tim Cook.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, we are getting an iPad event tomorrow, which we'll be on the lookout for. As for Berkshire, the other big topics, Able, the cash, Paramount, and what Buffett said about AI, deepfakes, and scams. Take a listen.
If I was interested in investing in scamming, it's going to be the growth industry of all time, and it's enabled in a way. Obviously AI has potential for good things too, but I don't know how you, based on the one I saw recently, I practically would send money to myself over in some crazy country. I do think, as someone who doesn't understand a damn thing about it, that it is. It has enormous potential for good and enormous potential for harm. And I just don't know how that plays out.
David, comparing it to nuclear weapons, genie out of the bottle, you two are kindred spirits on this front.
We are. Well, they don't call him the Oracle for nothing, guys. I mean, listen, you know, that said, of course, as Mr. Buffett indicated, there's very little that we fully can understand to a certain extent. Even its creators, who are deep in, sometimes don't fully understand. But it may not be as much as sort of the apocalyptic things that I kind of kid about on air, as you guys know, as much as the deep fakes and the ability for bad actors to use generative AI to their ends. And I certainly think that seemed to be where Buffett was more focused. But harm is harm. And while, you know, maybe they're not going to replace us just yet with the AI-generated robots, and that's a ways away, this is much, much nearer term. Don't you think, Jim?
Oh, yeah, David. I mean, I was arguing with someone about a Medicare scam where I knew it was a scam, and I knew that they had my medical records. I wish they did not. I don't know who gave up my medical records. And I was very cognizant that I went on too long and that they could easily imitate my voice doing something if they were going to do AI, because once you have the cadence, you can make anybody sound like you. And, you know, Carl, that's a real threat. I mean, someone sounded like me and I said, listen, we have a flash crash going on. Well, I mean, I could do some damage here.
On the anniversary of the actual flash crash day. Yeah. How about the cash? There's been some charting it against the Berkshire market cap. By that measure, it's not very extreme.
No, I also know that there was this bizarre mention of a Canadian company. I emailed Becky and congratulated on her great coverage, of course, and said that could this be Enbridge? Because that's a Canadian company that is got a huge pipeline, and he loves pipelines. And then I was also concerned. He talked about Geico and not having the right technology. You know, Geico would be the company that would bring down the cost of insurance. I think we're all conscious. When you get together, not that that's our topic, we got together this weekend about the Derby. And thank you for that great pick, number 11 there, and I won't mention your name.
And good ratings, by the way.
Yeah, very good ratings. But I did think, yeah, good ratings. I expected Geico to be the cost cutter. And Geico has not been... there, Progressive uses a huge amount of AI to figure out instantly whether they're off or on their market. But I do think that everybody, and David, I don't know whether you've checked your auto insurance recently, but it is probably the thing that has gone up the most.
Like a lot of Americans, I can attest to that. Yeah, I recently got my bill because I renewed it towards the end of May, and it was sticker shock, no doubt, like I'm sure a lot of people have experienced. Very significant. I didn't figure out the percentage increase, guys, but it had to be very large, that's all. I try, you know, you kind of, sometimes you look at a bill and you're like, I don't even want to think about how much that went up. That was kind of that case.
Yeah, and a lot of people have been holding back on fixing a problem that they have in an accident, Carl. They don't want to report it because they're afraid that their insurance will go up even more. It is ripe for a disruptor, the insurance industry. I always felt like my father had Geico, and I couldn't believe how low my father's insurance was versus mine. I thought that Geico would be the disruptor. I'd like to hear something about them doing that. That'd be great for America.
Yeah. Guys, busy morning. Bi-coastal squawk this morning. David's, of course, out west. We'll get his interviews from Milken, including Apollo's chief, Mark Rowan. Going to join him right after the break. In the next hour, it's Goldman's David Solomon and ExxonMobil's Darren Woods. Meantime, we'll get you set up for a week. Not a ton of data ahead of our way, but we'll get you ready for Disney tomorrow. Uber, Arm, Airbnb, Shop, Warner Brothers, all this week. Squawk on the Streets back in a minute.
Every day. Thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists put people at the heart of everything they create, like Olu Sheyi, a Comcast engineer who grew up bonding with his dad over sports. This inspired him and his team to create AI Highlights technology that uses AI and machine learning to detect the major plays in a sporting event, so millions of fans have a way of catching up on their favorite sports. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
We are live from the Milken Institute Global Conference, of course, here in Los Angeles. We have a lot to get to with our first guest. Joining me now is Mark Rowan. He's the CEO of Apollo Global, one of the largest alternative asset managers, $671 billion in assets under management. That's the new figure from the quarter that was just reported. And it's good to have you, actually, after that quarter as well, given that was, Thursday.
Thank you, David. Good morning.
Mark, it's good to have you. We're going to talk a lot about the private markets, as we have during this annual interview that we do. But I want to start off with the old business, private equity, because you guys are in the news with Paramount. I don't know how much you can share, but I would love if you could at least explain perhaps why Apollo is partnered with Sony on a potential bid to acquire Paramount. What's attractive about the asset?
Well, let's start. As you know, there's not a lot I can share, but private equity is all about value creation. It's about taking something and making it better. And so you think about industries that have gone through transformation, media, which you live every day, is in the midst of an amazing transformation. The notion that two studios could potentially come together, historically we would have thought not possible, but you think of all the new competition from streamers, from Meta, from Apple, and from everyone else. This market is wide open. Having scale, having the resources to produce content and to do it efficiently, having multiple genres, multiple everything, I think it's been an interesting spot for us. We're active through Yahoo, we're active through Legendary, we've been active in the space before, and partnering with a strategic just brings something else to the table.
Why do they need you?
Usually for money, but also we've been in this industry a long time. I used to joke with people in the cable television business that people thought of John Malone as the strategic and us as the financial, and yet you look at every business that John Malone's built, we built them and sold them to John. So we've been here a long time. This is, for me, my 40th year doing this. And for the team, 35 years in the media business. We've made the mistakes we need to make to pay the tuition.
You know, when it comes to that potential deal, and again, who knows at this point, it's not without its regulatory aspects as well, whether a foreign buyer in the form of Sony, obviously, or the stations, given how many you already own. Are those potential gating issues to any transaction coming to fruition?
Look, regulatory is an issue for every transaction, but these paths are well-trodden. Sony already owns a studio. We already own TV stations. The limits and the laws are pretty straightforward.
you think it would be, if you could get it at the right price, then something that would actually generate a good return, even in the very challenged world that we live in here in media land, Mark?
Look, as I say, for us, purchase price matters. This is all about providing our investors excess return per unit of risk. There is nothing that is worth doing that does not provide a return to our investors.
All right, I want to get back to the conversation we've been having for some time, and you have it elsewhere, which makes me jealous whenever you talk other places.
Well, yeah, that's, you can't have me every day.
I know. Well, I'd like to have you more often, but I'm glad you're here. You know, and I've noticed when you talk about sort of this move public to private, it feels as though every year that I look at it, your remarks get a little more pointed. This is from the conference call just last week. You said, I believe we are revisiting the most fundamental concepts that underlie our financial markets. And then you went on to talk about all the reasons why private going from AA to levered equity and public, 8,000 companies to four. But explain to our viewers, why are we revisiting the most fundamental concepts that underlie our financial markets?
Well, take the most basic product we have in the U.S., the largest pool of money, I believe, anywhere in the world, 401k, $12 to $13 trillion. These are the people who need returns the most. What are they invested in? For 50 years, they're invested in daily liquid stock index funds, for the most part. Why? Well, we go back and we think about the origins of our financial system, and stocks and bonds were the two tools that people used to build portfolios. And stocks were fully diversified, 8,000, as I said, public companies. Bonds, again, and now you look forward and you think about 80% of companies who are over 100 million of revenues in the US and Europe are private, not public. Why would you exclude yourself from that much of the marketplace? And the answer is people are not. We are revisiting the whole notion of what it means to be public, what it means to be private. Is public safe and is private risky? Or are both safe and risky and just offer differing degrees of liquidity? Lots of places around the world, be it Australia, be it what's happened in Mexico, have found a way to blend public and private markets on behalf of all investors.
Well, when you talk about that, you go on to say as well that you believe investors increasingly will seek out equity exposure in private markets in other forms that exist today. And you go on to say it's your job at Apollo to create the product. So what would that look like? Because we are talking about potentially a seismic change. And I wonder if I can access the private markets almost as easily as the public, what's the difference?
Well, I spoke at a conference and I spoke to a group of people who are on record as being against private equity. And I reminded them that private equity is a product. It's not in and of itself, it's not all equity that's private. And I tried to make a distinction in their minds between private equity, the product, and equity that is private. And it started with the same logic. If 80% of the market or 80% of the companies above 100 million of revenue are private, why would you exclude yourself from that marketplace? Think about what private equity is. Private equity is a fund. Private equity uses leverage to enhance returns. They target high rates of returns, and it's locked up. What if many of the characteristics of public also lived in the private market? Active management. But the difference between a public company and a private company may be share ownership and not much else.
Right. Well, and not access to daily liquidity, obviously, as well.
When you think about, again, the investor universe, start with the 401k. Do they need access to their money on a daily basis? Do they use access to their money? Are we paying too much for access to our money on a daily basis? Then you move to institutions, many of whom have 20 and 30 and 40 year time horizons. Why are big public institutions 80% liquid and 20% private? Because in another time, we thought of having a private bucket, because if private is risky, you want only a little bit of it. But if private is safe and risky and public is safe and risky, shouldn't you be where the action is?
So what are these products going to look like? Can you give us some sense as to how you think about it?
Well, look, you break it into, in the most simple way, the portfolio construction. You have equity, mostly public equity. You have debt, mostly public fixed income. And then you have alternatives. Alternatives are already almost exclusively in the private marketplace.
Yeah.
In credit, we are watching institutions and individuals around the world begin to use their fixed income bucket to participate in private credit market. I always like to challenge CIOs. Is a private single A rated security an alternative or is it fixed income? That can take an hour in some places. But by the way, it's just fixed income. And if you can earn another 150 or 200 basis points of return for the same rating, you're gonna do that with at least a portion of your portfolio that you do not need liquidity for. And why is it happening faster in private, in credit? It's happening because there are signposts. There are rating agencies who allow investors to say, this is a single A, this is a single A, and I'm just dealing with liquidity. We don't have those signposts in equity yet. But if 8,000 public companies go to 4,000 public companies and eventually go to 3,000 public companies, institutions around the world are going to need to find ways to participate in this market. And they may choose to participate in a product, private equity, or they may choose to participate in equity that is private.
Right. But when it comes to the private credit markets, which we've been discussing and which your firm has obviously benefited a great deal from, there is starting to be a bit of a pushback. David Solomon in his conference call said a lot of the refinancing that they did at Goldman was refinancing private credit capital structures with more attractive pricing available in the broad-based syndication market. JP Morgan sees rising credit default risk in the private credit market. Banks strike back against private credit.
Lots of it.
Well, what's going on here? Are we making too much of this? Is there starting to be a shift back the other way?
We're dealing with a fraction of the marketplace. Let's start with, what are they talking about? What is private credit? This is a definitional issue. For me, everything on a bank balance sheet is private credit. Loan to companies, private. Loan to individuals, private. Mortgages, private. 100% of a bank balance sheet is private credit. Most of these comments are actually talking about levered lending, direct lending.
Yes.
This is a nice and very important market. It's a $1.5 trillion market.
It's a profitable market.
It's a profitable market.
Big spreads.
But the market I'm talking about is a $41 or $42 trillion market. It encompasses investment grade. Most of the market in private is actually investment grade. Not a single one of these comments actually addresses what's happening. In 2008, as we were suffering a financial crisis and we were repairing, regulators around the world had a choice to make. Where do they want credit to come from? And there were only two choices. It can come from the bank marketplace, or it can come from investors. 2008, regulators made a decision in the U.S. that more credit should come from investors and less from the bank marketplace. And by the way, regulators around the world have continued to make this decision.
Yep.
This is not a market that we're talking about levered lending and the broadly syndicated market fighting back and credit default.
Yeah.
We're talking about a fundamental restructuring of the way that credit is provided. Is it provided by banks who have lots of good, strong reasons to provide credit, or is it provided by the investment marketplace? So think about where credit's going. Infrastructure, energy transition, long-dated things to support
enormous
technology.
Need for it from these kinds
these
of
are
things,
long-dated.
Yeah.
Yep. Are they on a bank balance sheet?
Right.
Are they in a daily liquid fund, or are they with institutions who have long-term horizons?
Mark, I want to end, if I can, on a sort of pivot to college campuses, because you were early and outspoken in terms of what you saw as rising anti-Semitism as a board member at Wharton, specific to Penn. Columbia just canceled its overall graduation. By the way, these are the same seniors who potentially had their graduations canceled from high school as a result of COVID. Where do you stand?
Not a very lucky class.
Yeah, no, not lucky. Where do you stand right now in terms of what you're seeing, what you're doing? Any improvements, or are you still frustrated?
Frustrated? I think all of us should be frustrated. We are the luckiest people in the world to have been born here, to be born at the time we have been, for all the freedoms that we have, all the opportunity that we have. What we're watching take place on campus is anti-Semitic. It is anti-American. It is anti-Western. And the question is, do our institutions, our educational institutions in particular, have the backbone to know right and wrong, moral from immoral? The fact that a small group of professors actually support a lot of the leftist ideology that's being espoused by these protesters has kept university administrations and university presidents somewhat paralyzed from simply clearing the campus and enforcing the law. Last time I came and occupied your home, probably made you unhappy. Nothing other than that is going on here. People, mostly outsiders, have taken over our campuses, and administrators have, in some instances, think University of Florida, think University of Texas, think Vanderbilt, really done a good job to say, free speech, great. Right to protest, great. But there's a way, there's a time, and there's a place, and if you violate the rules which apply to everyone, notwithstanding what you're protesting, there will be consequences. Other places, if you are weak up front and don't enforce your rules, you end up with encampments, and once you have an encampment, now you're weighing health and safety and other types of concerns. Bad management.
Well, we'll end there to be continued, but great. Always appreciate it, Mark. Thank you.
Great. Invite me back. Thank you.
You're always invited back. Mark Rowan from Apollo Global. Carl, we'll send it back to you.
Thanks. When we come back, we'll follow up on Paramount, talk some Starbucks. Got some sell-side calls this morning on names like Micron. One more look at the pre-market. We'll get this week started after a short break.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Let's squeeze in a quick mad dash before the bell.
Yeah, if you're looking for something that's up big today, it does matter. It's Micron. Baird upgrades it in this hold to buy. You can just see someone puts out a note on this one, and you quickly get a giant move. A lot of this is, you know, the high bandwidth business that is so good. That's the one that we think about for AI. So just keep in mind that there are buyers underneath of these stocks.
It's going to be between that and ARM later in the week.
Yes.
Plenty to talk about regarding chips. Let's get the bell here and the CNBC real-time exchange. And the big board, it's a scrub supplier, Figs, and at the NASDAQ IT company, Cognizant, celebrating the LPGA Tour's Cognizant Founders Cup. Jim, as we're going to try to work our way above the 50-day here for the first time in a few weeks.
I mean, what we want to do is we want to watch Apple, because Apple was a big driver last week. And that was a surprise driver that I think people can really get behind. We're still working the prospect that Alphabet is, but Google is better than expected. And Amazon, I just think, crushed the numbers, but had the misfortune of reporting on a day when we were concerned about whether rates were going to go up. So I think that there's just a lot of things that are just trying to catch up from last week that are positive.
Right. You made the point last week that it's kind of nice to have some open space where there's not a ton of data this week. We'll get a little Fed speak. We'll get some earnings. But really, until PPI on the 14th,
Exactly, Carl. We are in a kind of a halcyon moment. I mean, we do have ARM. I think Rene Haas is having a great quarter. I really think that ARM is going to be doing terrifically. Otherwise, I mean, when you look at the companies that are going to report, there's nothing that can move the market entirely because this is just the end. Last week was the end of the cycle. Look, Disney obviously matters. It's a Dow stock. It'll be Hugh Johnson, I think, on the call. Now, Hugh, we all know from PepsiCo, is just a very, very solid operator. So it would be terrific if he did the same thing he used to do, which is let people know exactly how the quarter was configured after it's reported. I hope he does that again. The banks seem to be playing some catch-up, which does matter, too.
David, Jim mentions Disney, and in fact, Deutsche today goes to 130. Loop goes to 140. They think, Alan Gould thinks that streaming losses are maybe ahead of guidance, and they say Iger gave a masterclass in how to beat an activist.
I'm not going to disagree in terms of some of that. Jim might, but listen, it is still very much a focus on Disney Plus, on direct to consumer, on the efforts to get that to profitability, and of course to bring it to a margin level eventually that is at least within spitting distance of Netflix. That's the hope. And how quickly they get there is going to be a key here. And if they show real progress this quarter, even perhaps as much as a break-even quarter, that would certainly be seen as a real positive, I think, Jim. Any number of other issues that you're still always going to be talking about. ESPN over the top, which is getting close. You know, we're gonna, at some point going to be less than a year away from what they still say is going to be a very important product for them, as opposed to the joint venture with Fox and Warner Brothers Discovery for the sports streaming service. But Jim, it's still all about, in many ways, direct to consumer for this entire industry. And of course, we'll talk a bit about Paramount as well, but specifically to Disney, which truly wants to be that number two and be in at least the conversation to attain the margins that we, of course, see at Netflix, which is obviously separated itself from everybody else.
Right. I think that Netflix has been this kind of straw man the whole way, and Netflix knows exactly what it's doing. And Netflix is always one step ahead of the posse. David, but Paramount, their Paramount Plus versus Disney, Paramount's really lagged. So it is interesting that someone might want to buy them still.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the purchase there, and you heard Mark Rowan, which was nice because it's not often that you get at least even any color from a potential bidder for an asset. But talking about the possibilities of putting Sony, Legendary, Paramount together. It's all about efficiencies. It's all about cost cutting, frankly, in many ways, and then sort of having a strategy to attack this new world. I think even more so from the Redbird Ellison side, Skydance, remember, which they're still in negotiations. As we told you Friday, of course, the exclusivity would expire. It did. Sony and Paramount's, Sony and Apollo's bid is now being reviewed as well by the special committee. So they've got two things in front of them, at least. They're working on both. It may be that neither one comes to fruition, although I think there is a hope that certainly door A or door B is preferable to door C, being this company just stays independent and tries to fight through this period of incredible challenge on its own. Right now, with three different people running it, it seems very hard to imagine that that would be good for shareholders in any way. But that at least is also being held out as a possibility. We'll see. They want to get this thing done as quickly as they can, for obvious reasons. They've been negotiating with Skydance for such a long period of time. They're going to really deeply explore Sony and Apollo's bid.
Okay, so if you could be Monty Hall one more time.
That is a deep track.
Yeah, right. Could you please tell us or handicap a person who has a not great balance sheet, which I would say Warner Brothers, you may disagree with that, the not great balance sheet, versus Comcast, which happens to have a very good balance sheet when it comes to the NBA?
I think, you know, listen, it's Comcast has put Warner Brothers Discovery. This is what I am hearing, okay? It's not my opinion. They would say in a difficult position because very difficult for them to spend $2.5 billion on the NBA over an 11-year contract, by the way. And very difficult for them to look at what the future of TNT would be without the NBA and what that does and how much it damages the company at this point, which is still relying on its cable networks to produce a great deal of its overall cash flow. That's what David Zaslav has made it, right? It's a free cash flow story. That's the focus. And parts of his compensation and metrics are based on free cash flow and the delivery of that. So, you know, you put them in a position, Jim, where they're damned if they do or damned if they don't, I think is the thinking, at least on Comcast NBC Universal's part. That said, it's a big number for Comcast as well. And as you know, Peacock is not exactly making a lot of money right now either.
No.
As for Buffett, which we began the hour with, interesting to listen to him really take responsibility for that trade, which obviously got unwound. Take a listen to Buffett.
We've sold on. A, I was 100% responsible for the Paramount decision. I read speculation that one of them, either Ted or Todd, had some involvement in that. No, it was 100% my decision. And we sold it all, and we lost quite a bit of money. I think I'm smarter now than I was a couple years ago, but I also think I'm poorer because I acquired the knowledge in the manner I did. But I just want to be very clear that that A, we lost money on Paramount, and B, you know, I did it all by myself, folks.
Well, there's two things that no managers ever do. One is admit that they lost the money, and two, that they did it. You got to admit, David, whatever reason, it was a breath of fresh air. Managers should learn exactly what he said and use that when they've lost money.
Yeah, I mean, but there's only one Warren Buffett, right? He gets an awful lot of patience from his investor base. A lot of these other guys are just selling, selling, selling. It would never be in their ability to actually admit a mistake because, God forbid, that might hurt their ability to market and raise more money. Warren's not worried about that. He likes to play risk arb sometimes. He did it on Activision, too. And in this one, I always wondered what in the world he was thinking, frankly. And I guess he wonders as well. And every so often, Jim, he makes a bad move, right? I mean, you remember the airlines.
Right. I tend to want to forget the bad moves, given the fact that I see so many managers making bad moves that never admit it, versus this fellow who is so public in what he does. that it, for him to admit it is actually just showing you how much humility he has. He could just say, look, I bought Apple. Nobody else bought Apple like this. Everyone else traded Apple. I owned Apple. I took a little profit in Apple because it was too big. I mean, David, no one did that, okay? And I think that I can forgive Paramount, I can forgive the airlines, given the fact that this is a person who took a position in Apple and just kind of owned it through a bunch of transitions. You got to appreciate that.
Without a doubt. And by the way, let's be clear. The loss on Paramount was, infinitesimal compared to the gain on Apple or the overall position. So even though he said we lost a lot of money, yeah, it's a lot of money in aggregate, but not as a percent overall of their performance in any way.
Yeah. Now, what was his view on the Vision Pro? Did you get that?
Kramer won.
No, but he was talking
zero.
To me about some land he's got in New Mexico that he'd really like to sell to Disney.
500,000 yeah. acres. I have an option on it. If they do it, yeah. David, see you later. I will be at whatever it is, those Skydance things that you do. What is that thing in Aspen that you go to? I don't know, whatever that is.
Jim, speaking of...
I don't go to anything in Aspen.
Speaking of tough talk, I got to get your take on this Schultz post regarding really the U.S. operations of Starbucks.
Ooh, okay. All right, so obviously Howard Schultz very unhappy. The LinkedIn post, I think, focuses on a couple things, not just that America has to be fixed, but there is a notion in the note that there has to be a little more humility. Contrition was the word that he picked.
More time with aprons on.
Right, and then I thought the most important line in this entire thing was that, and we're talking about Luxman Narasimhan, the current CEO, is that senior leaders, including board members, need to spend more time with those who wear the green apron. One of their first actions should be to reinvent the mobile ordering and pay platform, which Starbucks pioneered. So right there he's saying, listen, you can't get in and out, and that apparently is what hurting some of the loyalty. Now, let's understand, Melody Hobson ran the search. Melody Hobson picked Luxman. This is not going to be something that I regard as being revolutionary, because if the chairman of the board, Melody Hobson, is for Luxman, then Howard's great to be able to put some heat on it, but it ends there. And I can't imagine that the chairperson would do anything to make it so that Howard's comments would do more than just be read.
Feeding the discussion, though, that we heard from McDonald's and Mondelez and Lamb Weston and Kraft Heinz.
Expensive. Yep. Expensive. And Howard did not key on expensive, other than the fact that I think, David, one of the things that he is upset about, obviously, is that there no one on the board understands the inner workings of the company. There's no retail operator or merchant that Howard has the respect of, with the intimate knowledge of the complexity, including China, 82 countries, 100 million customers. So I know that Howard would like to have someone on the board that has that. Rich Allison was at Domino's. There's a person that's got some worldwide retail experience. Andy Campion from Nike has a terrific knowledge of China. But David, there's no one that does fit that depiction, like a David Gibbs or something that Howard would like, other than Howard.
Right. Well, but Jim, I mean, listen, he is a significant owner of stock, so he's a significant shareholder, but it ends there. This is unusual, to say the least, isn't it? To see an ex-CEO, by the way, he's been CEO three different times, putting out this level of criticism of the current management team. I mean, it's highly unusual. What is it? Does he want to come back a fourth time?
No. No, and candidly, I've never seen this done. I think he's coming from the point of view of just sadness about where the franchise is. But when you look at the board, there will be there's no one there who can really necessarily do. They can put some aprons on. Nadella can put an apron on. Siebert, who's brand new, an apron on. Obviously, Melody Hobson chose, very, very forwardly, by the way, just so you know, chose Luxman. So I don't think that this goes further unless, David, you can tell me, doesn't Elliott move in here? Doesn't Ackman move in here, who was there before? Does a Pepsi move in? Does a Nestle's? Or are those type of things that just because of antitrust might as well just forget about?
Yeah, I mean, it's awfully hard to imagine multi-hundred billion dollar deals, even if you can't, I mean, even if it adds up on paper, you're going to probably get challenged in some way.
Right.
What you're describing would be fascinating. But and activism, Jim, you've got to have a plan. You've got to have some sort of idea that there's truly a plan that can be executed upon. And to your point, it's not likely trying to sell the company. So a plan from an execution standpoint that's going to somehow create value, is that obvious at this point?
No, not at all. And I think that one of the things that is that I think Howard may be trying to do is simply get the board to try to help more about what's going on. And it's not clear that what's going on is anything other than the fact that the numbers were so horrible that Howard was shocked like a lot of other people. I mean, David, when I saw the numbers last week, it was disconcerting, given the fact that there had been an expectation they were going to do 15 to 20% growth. They didn't do that, giving, I know for instance, Howard was never ever mentioned weather as a reason why his numbers came down. That was actually one of his hallmarks. Please never mention weather. Dunkin' had numbers that were the opposite of Starbucks, and Dunkin' offers more of a value. So, David, is it grousing? I think it's more than that. I think it's someone who is saying, hey, look, here's some ideas. Now, David, I don't think that ideas are as I don't think they're going to be as well taken, if only just because Howard decided to leave the board and Howard is not desiring to come back on the board. So I don't think that I think it's interesting and I think it's a nice note about what should be done. But beyond that, David, I don't know what else there can be done.
Yeah. Time, I guess. We'll see. We'll see what they can plan. Obviously, to be fair to Luxman as well, a number of these issues were in place, Jim, before he took over. Raised by Howard Schultz. Were they not? Yeah.
No, they were. I think that what happened was an expectations thing. I think that there was a sudden decline that kind of took everybody's breath away. We knew that things were being guided down. It had been guided down since 106. But there was an expectation that if your numbers are going to be this bad, you should have pre-announced. And they did not pre-announce. And the numbers, I don't think anyone that I've heard you thought that the numbers were suboptimal. I think people felt the numbers were just plain horrible.
Jim, more macro. Above 5150 for the first time since tax day. That's in spite of the fact that some of the headlines coming out of the Middle East do not give great hope to a ceasefire, let's say, in the short term.
I am surprised that they're being ignored, given the fact that this is something that affects all the world, because last time I don't like to conflate money with lives from on either side, obviously, but I do think that there was a $5 war premium in oil that had disappeared, given the fact that maybe that people had hope in a ceasefire. And that $5 war premium is going to have to be built back in. When David speaks to Darren Woods, I think you have to try to figure out, David, exactly if there could be a return to the war premium. I don't know.
Okay. I will try and do that, Jim.
Yeah, because, the peace did, there was a perception that maybe there would be a treaty. And that I know that Blinken was working hard toward a treaty. It doesn't look like there is.
Yeah. Meantime, gasoline futures, two-month low. Couple pieces on the tape today about gasoline demand growth, Jim, this year might be cut in half because of what China's done in the way of building in EVs.
Very important. I understand that Tesla had a very bad month in Germany. That there's no, obviously we're loving the hybrids here, but China is the place where we have the worst climate change, and that's largely because of coal. So, David, I think that China cutting back on gasoline is going to make it so that there's going to be a surfeit of gasoline no matter what, particularly because the United States is producing a little more gasoline than people expect.
Right. Interesting. Jim, Carl, I do notice shares of Lilly are having a nice morning so far. Obviously, one of the other themes that we've been talking about for quite some time. I sat next to somebody last night who I knew well at dinner last night, who was on one of the drugs, and I was struck by how little they ate, I have to say.
Well, that may be why the stock's up.
I mean, they fully admitted it. I'm like, why aren't you eating your dinner? Monjuro.
Dr. Gottlieb spoke
for you. That was a great hit this morning.
It was a fantastic hit. We got to reference that. I think that what people may be missing is that, I got a drug that's it's going to be in trials. And, 2 to 3 is actually very, very hard for something that has a new mechanism when there's already an old mechanism in place. because the FDA is very reluctant to approve a new medicine without much further study, given the fact that they already have one. So, David, I don't know about your compadre there, but I think Lilly may be going up because people realize that Amgen's not about to put something in the market. You can't also produce it so quickly. It does matter how hard it is to produce.
That's
but
well
that's
said.
A great thought, and I think your person, that's very important.
Meantime, as we go to break, as we said, 51.57 is going to be about a three-week high on the S&P. Every sector green except for staples down just a touch. And you can see bonds, 10-year still circulating, 4.5. Not a lot of Fed speak. Actually, tonight we'll get Barkin and Williams this afternoon.
Okay.
But for the week, it's mostly about jobless claims and UMish on Friday. Stay with us. Time for Jim and Stop Trading.
You know, there's one of the most controversial stocks in the market is Carvana. One of the most controversial analysts in the street is Adam Jonas from Morgan Stanley. He has a sell on this, but he talks about raising his price target from 45 to 75, bull case 180. He talks about the return to profitability. Now, the one thing that I think that he doesn't really take into account is that the stock is up another 5.5. And this is one of the greatest short squeezes of all times. I spoke to Ernie Garcia a couple times. You know, Ernie went from being, you know, losing the company to having just a major home run thanks to Apollo.
Yep.
And I think it's just a different company. Sometimes you just reinvent your company and it goes places, and this is pretty good.
Meantime, Jonas has also written about the EV business. I think he said going into a dark age, robotics, AI are ascendant. And as a result, Tesla's priorities are changing, too.
Right. And I do think that when you do robotics, there's only one company that can do it, which is NVIDIA. Because as I've seen that Blackwell, the robot can basically be us. I know that David may not want that. I mean, I don't know. I can have a David sitting here and like what I say and
that's,
smile.
That's why he's scared.
I'm ready. Yes. I'm ready. That robot is the robot I've been waiting for all my life. But, you know, the robots that Jensen Huang from, you know, from NVIDIA has are very robots that I know that Musk likes.
Yes.
Musk likes.
Yes.
And that's important because Tesla has a good relationship now after a rocky one.
Really quick tonight.
I got Judy McReynolds from ArcBest. I think that there's nothing like analyzing the trucking companies to try to figure out what's really going on in America, which we have to since it's so important.
All right, we'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time. When we come back, more from David at Milken, including interviews with Goldman's David Solomon and Exxon's Darren Woods. Back in a moment. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.